I am happy to announce that myself and Dr. Michael Greger are speaking and cooking at a five-day all-inclusive retreat called Balance for Life in Deerfield, Florida. The program, the speakers, the all-plant-based food menu, and the beautiful beachfront location will make this a life-changing wellness retreat you will not want to miss. The event takes place February 28th through March 3rd, 2020. Use the coupon code ORDINARYVEGAN when you make your reservation and you will save an additional $100 per guest. Hope you can join us, and I will put the link to the retreat in this week's show notes.
You're listening to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, where we teach you everything you need to know about adopting a plant-based diet full or part-time. Our goal is to empower you to live a long and healthy life. You can find today's show at ordinaryvegan.net or on iTunes. If you have any questions, please send an email to questions@ordinaryvegan.net.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, number 63. An interview with Dr. Michael Greger about his new book called How Not to Diet. If you're not familiar with Dr. Michael Greger, you should be. He is a physician, best-selling author, and internationally recognized professional speaker on a number of important health issues. He is also the founder of the nonprofit NutritionFacts.org and the author of the New York Times bestseller, How Not to Die. Basically, Dr. Greger devotes his life to research so he can provide evidence-based information to help all of us live a long and healthy life. So don't move an inch. He is one in a million. If we haven't met, my name is Nancy Montori, and I am the founder of Ordinary Vegan, the podcast, the website, the Ordinary Vegan CBD line, which is helping so many people. And I also have a plant-based five-ingredient cookbook being released in January, which I am very excited about. In addition to all that, we have an inspiring health and wellness community on Facebook, over 310,000 strong. Please join us. Just go to facebook.com/ordinaryvegan. And last but not least, please follow me, Ordinary Vegan, on Instagram. We are working on coming up with some exclusive content for our Instagram. Now, let's hear what Dr. Greger has to say about dieting and losing weight. Hello, Dr. Greger. So happy to have you back on the Ordinary Vegan Podcast.
Happy to be back.
So rumor has it that you are releasing a new book on December 10th, 2019, called How Not to Diet.
The rumor is true. Pre-order your copy today.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up because I would like to mention that everyone out there listening can pre-order Dr. Greger's book on Amazon. And there will be a link in this week's show notes. And we can help Dr. Greger get on the New York Times bestseller list by pre-ordering his book.
Oh, that's very sweet. Yes, I'm excited to see how it does.
So just go to nutritionfacts.org /how-not-to-diet. And oh, by the way, all the sales of his book are donated to charity.
So, of course.
We are so fortunate to have you in our lives and on this podcast, so let's cut right to it. Dr. Greger, you have a new book. So what is the new book about, and what is the goal of this book?
So the new book is about weight loss. It's probably the biggest research project I've ever taken on in my life. There are hundreds of thousands of papers published on obesity in the peer-reviewed medical literature, a lot of which is contradictory. And so me and my team took it on. It's actually a bigger book than How Not to Die. Actually, split up into two parts. First half of the book is basically creating an optimal weight loss diet from the ground up. Originally, we were just going to go through all – to have a chapter on each of the current kind of, you know, popular diets and talk about their pros and cons as kind of per the title, How Not to Diet. But then we realized, you know, that's like playing whack-a-mole. So many new diets all the time. You know, I'm on the U.S. News and World Report, you know, Best Diets panel. And, you know, every year there's another couple dozen diets we have to look at. And so realized, you know, God, by the time the book came out, it'd already be kind of out of date. Because, you know, so instead of doing that, we decided to just, well, let's see what are the criteria, what kind of ingredients are there for the optimal weight loss diet? And we came up with 17. And so that way you could take any new diet that comes down the road later and compare it to these 17 criteria and see how closely it matches. That's the first half of the book. And then it ends with, okay, well, what diet best matches those 17? And then the second half of the book is, all right, what other kind of boosters or accelerators, ways to accelerate the loss of body fat, regardless of what you eat? So talking about chronobiology, like meal timing, talking about, you know, tweaking exercise, sleep, and these other methods to accelerate weight loss. So that is kind of compiled in my 21 tweaks, which will complement the Daily Dozen. We're actually going to update the Daily Dozen free app on iPhone and Android. There'll be a weight loss setting you can toggle to, and then you'll get a whole nother checklist of my 21 tweaks to see how closely you can, again, just to kind of inspire people to not only try to include the healthiest of healthy foods in their daily diet, but also the various ways in which they can help accelerate weight loss as well.
Wow, it sounds great. And I've got a lot of questions about that. First, can you explain why you say farewell to the 3,500 calorie plan?
Oh, yeah. So that's interesting. So, I mean, it's just this rule. I mean, if you look even at the nutrition textbooks or, you know, prestigious institutions like the Mayo Clinic, you know, they talk about how each pound of fat is, you know, equivalent to about 3,500 calories. So if you cut 500 calories out of your daily diet, 500 times 7 is 3,500, so you should lose a pound a week. One has to kind of bust that myth, and you can realize why that doesn't make any sense at all, because obviously if you weigh 150 pounds and you cut 500 calories out of your daily diet, in 150 weeks you wouldn't reach zero, you wouldn't start floating. So it's not a linear response at all. Heavier bodies require more energy just to move around, just like it takes more gas to fuel a Hummer than it does a little car, a compact car. I mean, it takes more calories to exist as a heavier person. So that's why when you lose weight, you actually require fewer calories. And so it kind of plateaus out over time. You have to account for that. There's a variety of tools, both online and kind of different kind of shortcuts one can use to estimate exactly how much one would have to eat less or eat more to gain or lose weight.
Well, obesity in the United States is still a major health issue and epidemic. Why does obesity continue to be a health challenge with everything we know?
One has to look back. Well, where did this obesity epidemic come from in the first place? There was this dramatic increase in the late 70s, basically around the world, the obesity statistics taking off. You say, wait a second, what happened in the 70s that led to this increase? And what happened is changes in our food supply. We started eating more because, it's not that we ate more. We ate more calories, not necessarily more food. But the food changed such that the food became more calorically dense, or more calories per mouthful, more calories per pound, more calories per unit volume. And much of that is this these ultra-processed foods And one says maybe called pseudo foods, really. They're not really foods. They're just kind of amalgamations of flavorings and colorings and salt and sugar that makes up about half of the food supply, many of which are subsidized by taxpayers, making it very profitable to sell people such garbage. But unfortunately, it's not real food. And it doesn't satiate our satiety mechanisms because they've had the fiber stripped away, the protein stripped away, the water taken out. And so basically, one of the directions my book takes is encouraging people to eat more whole foods as grown, just for a variety of reasons that can help us best control our weight.
In a recent webinar, you said that we have metabolic slowing after we lose weight. Can you explain what that is and why would that be?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, we evolved over millions of years in really in a context of scarcity. And so our bodies evolved into be energy-conserving machines. And so if all of a sudden we start eating less food, our body thinks there must be a famine afoot, and so slows down our metabolism, slows down the rate at which we burn calories so as to help us survive until the next harvest or until the next time we have food availability. And so those built-in biological mechanisms to keep us through a famine, that turned us into kind of fat storage machines, calorie storage machines, really works against us when you dump it down into a context of excess calories around every corner. And so when we try to lose weight, our body actively fights against it. So that's why, for example, if you exercise, your body tries to slow you down the rest of the day to undercut some of that calorie loss. Or if we start reducing our calorie intake, our body ramps up our appetite, so we eat more. I mean, it's constantly trying to, maintain our weight because we had this constant selective pressure to develop ways to maintain our weight. Unfortunately, they work against us now. It's actually a disadvantage in the current modern context, which can help explain why we have such an obesity epidemic in the modern world.
So how can we experience permanent weight loss?
Oh, well, we can eat the way nature intended. That way we can wall off our calories. So basically, animal cells are just are surrounded by easily digestible membranes. So our body has no problems extracting the calories from a steak, for example. But plant cells are surrounded by cell walls made out of indigestible fiber, presenting this kind of indigestible barrier slow or, frankly, stop calorie extraction from whole, intact plant foods. Processed plant foods, however, like refined grains, fruit juice, have had their cell walls destroyed, and their calories are then released and free for the taking. Even something like whole wheat flour, so that's a whole food, right? Nothing's been extracted from it, just because of the powdering process. When you powder whole grains into flour, you break open all those cell walls, and the calories are free for the taking. So I encourage people to move to try to wall off their calories. Try to make sure their protein, their carbs, their fat are encapsulated by fiber. In other words, from whole, intact, unprocessed plant foods.
Well, do you believe that eating less calories extends our longevity?
Oh, well, it certainly works in a variety of animal species. We have yet to find out if it works in human beings. However, the calorie study, the most extensive study done so far on calorie restriction, found that cutting a few hundred calories from one day over a period of years had remarkable benefits. Now, these people started out normal weight, which in the United States means overweight on average. So they were overweight. They cut a few hundred calories. They lost a lot of weight and felt fantastic. Their libido went up. Their mood went up. All sorts of remarkable benefits suggesting that they were being really weighed down by excess calorie consumption. And so in that context, caloric restriction would certainly help, and their biomarkers suggested that they would indeed go on to have less chronic disease, but that's something that has never been directly tested in human beings before.
Well, many of the ordinary vegan community practices intermittent fasting with either food or time restricted eating. What do you think of this practice? And can you go into it and just compare the different ways of doing it? Because there's so much confusion out there about what works and why you should do it.
Yeah, so I have a whole webinar, I believe 2 months ago, maybe July. I did a three-hour webinar on intermittent fasting that's available if anyone really wants to do a deep dive. In fact, September 19th, I'm going to do a webinar on fasting for disease reversal. And then October 25th, a third fasting webinar, another 3 hours on fasting and cancer. But in terms of intermittent fasting, there's a variety of ways you can do it. There's alternate day fasting, where you eat one day and fast the next, either completely fast or water only fast, or do a modified fast and only eat a few hundred calories every other day. There's 5-2 fasting, where you fast 2 days a week. There's fasting, the mimicking diets, where 5 days a month people eat kind of a modified fast, few hundred calories a day for 5 days. There's a variety of religious fasts like Ramadan fasting, but you're actually not cutting calories. You're actually eating the same amount of food, but you're eating at night instead of during the day. In terms of the benefits of intermittent fasting, the thought is maybe we could prevent that metabolic slowing. Maybe we could prevent lean muscle mass. Maybe we could prevent some of the bone loss by doing intermittent fasting versus continuous calorie restriction. It turns out none of that is true. Intermittent fasting does not seem to hold those benefits and may have the serious flaw of increasing cholesterol levels. So alternate day fasting can increase cholesterol levels. That's the longest, largest study to date showed that. Although there was this really fascinating study back then about a half century ago in Spain that suggested that alternate day fasting may indeed, amongst the elderly, may decrease morbidity, may decrease hospitalization, so significantly improve one's health. But in terms of benefits for weight loss, didn't seem to improve compliance or all the other things that intermittent fasting proponents would like to put forward, and I'd be concerned about the cholesterol issue. But time-restricted feeding has shown benefits. So by restricting the daily feeding window to, 18 hours or less, 12 hours even, 8 hours, has metabolic benefits, but the critical factor is when you have that window. If you do it late, so for example, if you skip breakfast every day and do a late time restricted feeding, you actually have negative metabolic effects. The best is early time restricted feeding, so large breakfast. Do the king, prince, pauper kind of scenario. A large breakfast, early lunch, early dinner, then fast overnight, never eat at night. And that's probably the best of both worlds in terms of the chronobiological benefits of pushing, loading more calories towards the morning, plus the benefits you have from going more than 12 hours without eating.
Are there any studies that back that up?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I go through those studies and talk about the benefits of a regular early time-restricted feeding on a variety of metabolic risk factors.
Does it matter what you're eating?
Oh, of course it matters what you're eating. But so regardless of what you eat, it's healthier to do it that way. But then, of course, ideally you'd be eating a healthy diet during that period. In fact, that may be one of the benefits for why the longest living, to help explain the longest living population in the world, which is the Seventh-day Adventist vegetarians in Loma Linda, California, appear to live longer than anyone else on the planet. It's not only just because they're eating a plant-based diet, but they also tend to many do 2 meals a day, and if anything, skip supper, not breakfast.
Interesting. Do you practice that, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I do try. I mean, once I learned about all that literature, I try to eat supper earlier now. It's not possible for everyone due to kind of work constraints, but if it's possible, I try to eat early as possible. And try not to eat late. Definitely no night eating, and have definitely increased the size of my breakfast to try to load calories earlier in the day.
Because I always get asked this, I want to ask you, how much protein should we eat based on our weight?
Yeah, so it's 0.8 grams per healthy kilogram body weight, which comes out to be about 50 grams, a little more for men, a little less for women. So, as long as you're eating enough calories, you're eating a variety of whole healthy plant foods, getting enough protein should be easy, particularly if you're eating legumes, beans, split peas, chickpeas, and lentils. Anyone who doesn't know how to get protein on a plant-based diet doesn't know beans. So go out and have some hummus.
I'm told that in the last part of your book, you go through very specific foods proven in studies to enhance weight loss by acting as fat blockers or metabolic boosters. Can you go through some of those foods, share some of those foods with us today?
Oh, yeah. In fact, so you were talking about that metabolic slowing. There's actually a food that's been shown to prevent the metabolic slowing, and it's actually capsaicin. That's the spicy part of hot peppers. So if you eat a half teaspoon of cayenne pepper a day, one can undercut your body's ability to slow down its metabolism and undercut your weight loss. Thankfully, for people that don't like spicy foods, you can get the same benefit eating a teaspoon of ground ginger every day. I also talk about the benefits of vinegar, two teaspoons at every meal, in terms of something called AMPK activation, which is an enzyme that that helps control the amount of fat in your body. I talk about the benefits of cumin, half teaspoon at lunch and dinner. Green tea, encourage three cups a day. Quarter teaspoon of garlic powder every day. Quarter teaspoon of black cumin, which is not regular cumin, but has a variety of benefits, including, I believe in that case, appetite suppression. I talk about the time-restricted eating. What other particular foods? I got the vinegar down there. Those things, and they work various ways. In terms I wanted to find every kind of tip, trick, and tweak and technique to try to help people lose as much weight as they wanted to and keep it off.
And what did you do research about exercising and weight loss?
Absolutely. So predominantly it's about exercise, optimizing exercising timing. So, in How Not to Die, I talk about we should ideally exercise 90 minutes a day, moderate intensity exercise. Question is, when should you do it? So the big question for exercise in the exercise physiology literature is, should you exercise before breakfast or after breakfast? What's better in terms of body fat loss? And the answer is before breakfast or after at least 6 hours of fasting. So it doesn't have to necessarily be exercising before breakfast. I could be exercising before a late lunch or between dinner, as long as going 6 hours without eating before exercising to boost body fat loss. But it only works if you do it every day, because your body tries to get you to conserve extra fat on the days that you're not exercising. So you want to do it every day.
Why is that? Why does your body do that?
That is fascinating. So it has to do with glycogen storage. So basically, let me pull that up. Actually, oh, it's just a fascinating story. So, here, let me find the exercise. You can get a sneak preview here.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. No, here we go. Tell me if you call. Oh, all sorts of really fascinating things. So swimming is not a good exercise for losing weight.
What?
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, and it's the temperature of the water. It's the cold water undercuts. Because it so ramps up your appetite that you don't lose any weight. Anyway, let me move to find the timing. All right. Okay. Best is more the better. Often tying morning to the evening. So we have more than a dozen experiments comparing the amount of fat burned in a fasted state versus fed state. Every single one, more fat burned on an empty stomach. About 3 more grams of fat, same amount of exercise, before meal versus after meal. And let's see if I go into the mechanism. Basically, you know, carbohydrates are preferred fuel for our body. Whenever we eat sugar, starches get broken down to blood sugar, and after meal, blood sugars rise, and our muscles snatch it up for fuel. And if you take a siesta after a meal, your bodies have no immediate need for energy, so the excess blood sugar from the meal is stored for later use in our muscles in the form of glycogen, which is like a bunch of sugar molecules bunched together in a massive branch that can be broken off and used for quick bursts of energy. Now, so if you exercise after a meal, your muscles siphon off some of the extra blood sugar floating around for energy. When you work out before a meal, though, your muscles have to resort to dipping into our energy stores and end up burning mostly a combination of glycogen and fat. And that explains why you burn more fat during fasted exercise. What about all the extra fat burned throughout the day, which is what we find? And it turns out the glycogen is more just a store, it's more than just an energy reserve. It's a sensor capable of activating metabolic pathways. If you exercise before breakfast, you can exhaust as much as 18% of your glycogen stores, and that acts as a powerful rallying cry to your fatty tissues to start pulling more of their own weight by breaking down fat. And the lower the glycogen stores fall, the greater the sustained 24-hour fat loss. But this critically is for non-diabetics. If you have type 2 diabetes, then you want to do the opposite. You want to exercise after a meal because that siphoning effect muscles have on excess blood sugar can be great for those suffering with elevated blood sugars. And so you can randomize diabetics to stroll before and after a meal and find with a little tactical timing, you can make a huge difference exercising after a meal. So blood sugar starts to spike about 15, 20 minutes after your first bite. Ramps up at 30 minutes, peaks at about 1 hour. And so we want to ideally start exercising 30 minutes after the start of a meal and go for an hour, ideally completely straddle the blood sugar peak. If you had to choose one meal, it would be dinner because of our circadian rhythms of blood sugar control wane throughout the day. But of course, as I said, breakfast should be the largest meal of the day and you'd exercise after that, or ideally after every meal if you have type 2 diabetes.
Well, let me ask you this. Can you lose weight and not exercise?
Oh, absolutely. Boy, you lock someone in a closet, you can force them to lose as much weight as you want. the research on exercise for weight loss is very disappointing, actually. And that's because it requires huge amounts of exercise to significantly cut down on the weight. But with enough exercise, you can indeed add to the benefit. But it's mostly the calories in. I mean, you can imagine how easy it is to... in a few minutes, you can eat hundreds of calories, and that would take hours to exercise off.
You have any recommendations about how we can form new habits and start eating right or, you know, adding exercise to our routines?
Sure. Something called implementation intentions, which is how you form healthy habits. The whole point of forming healthy habits is that then you eventually do them just automatically without even thinking about them. And so you can form healthy habits. So habits are formed when you do the same thing in the same context day after day. And it takes about 60 days on average to form. Seems like a lot of work up front, but then it's kind of automatic. You can benefit from them for the rest of your life. And so you start out with if-then statements. So if I get hungry at work, I'll have an apple. That's a intention that you can implement every day. And so then you do that. And then after 60 or 66 days, I think is the average, eventually you will crave that apple at work. And it's something that you wouldn't have to force yourself to do, or you can say, you know, every time I, you know, fill up my water bottle. I'm going to do 10 squats while I'm waiting for the water bottle to fill up or something like that. Again, you know, in a certain context, you're going to do a certain thing. And if you do that consciously every single day for a few months, then it'll become second nature. And you'll just have this weird urge to eat a salad or to eat a piece of fruit or to exercise at particular times just because you have formed a habit by then.
Wow, good advice. I like it. I know we're running out of time. I know you're a busy man. But my last question comes from one of our community members, Maribel. She wanted to know, what are the top foods you recommend for multiple sclerosis warriors?
Oh, well, I mean, the most important thing is, you know, the Roy Swank diet in general, which is to decrease saturated fat consumption. It's actually found predominantly in meat, dairy, and processed junk, like these tropical oils, like palm oil, coconut oil. So the most important thing you can do is decrease your intake of those foods. In terms of foods you add to your diet, I don't think there's any specific foods that have been identified. It's more foods that we want to remove from our diet, and those would be ones high in saturated fat.
Thank you. Also, Dr. Greger and I will be speaking at a five-day all-inclusive health and wellness retreat at Balance for Life in Deerfield, Florida, on February 28th through March 3rd. So everyone out there, please join us for this healthy vacation. I take it you'll be talking more about your book.
I have no idea. Well, I've got 200 dates on my speaking tour, wow. So I'm not sure what I'm doing that one, but maybe.
You are a popular guy. Thank you so much, Dr. Greger, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with the Ordinary Vegan community. We appreciate you so much.
So happy to help. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
That's it for today's podcast. Thank you so much for being here. This podcast grows by sharing, so please share with anyone that may be interested in living a long, healthy, compassionate life. I appreciate all of you so much, and please keep those comments and emails coming. They brighten my day. If you can, join us in Deerfield, Florida for the wellness retreat on February 28th through March 3rd, 2020. I would love to hang out with all of you. Till next time.
Thanks for joining our plant-based community today. Together, we can accomplish great things. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of Ordinary Vegan's recipes and plant-based tips. If you have any questions or feedback, email us at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Until next time.